Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, Scott Horton Show. Next up today is Len Ackland. He is a former newspaper reporter and editor of the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists magazine. And he wrote a book about the Rocky Flats nuclear bomb factory near Denver. Ain't that interesting? And that factory actually plays a part in this article. The article is at revealnews.org. Revealnews.org. The title, Obama Pledged to Reduce the Nuclear Arsenal. Then came this weapon, the B-61-12. Welcome to the show, Len. How are you?
I'm fine, Scott. Thank you.
Very happy to have you on the show here. What is the B-61-12?
The B-61-12 is a guided nuclear bomb. It will be the first guided nuclear bomb in the U.S. arsenal. And it is currently being developed and tested at the Sandia National Laboratories in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The B-61-12 is just, you know, one U.S. nuclear weapon, but its development really illustrates a much larger issue, which is the power and influence of the nuclear weapons industry, which has been rebranded or has rebranded itself in recent years as the nuclear enterprise. Mm-hmm. You'll recall that President Eisenhower warned the nation in his farewell address about the military-industrial complex, and you know, the story of the B-61-12 really talks about the military-industrial congressional complex.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, so a lot of things to go over there already. First of all, just on the name, I thought when I read that in your article that that seems to me a big blunder on their part, even admitting they exist under any name, especially admitting to this sort of, you know, this concept of a military-industrial complex, but giving it the name Enterprise instead as some kind of chintzy euphemism. Whereas before, at least in my mind, Len, I got to tell you, and I've been very cynical about American foreign policy for a long time, but it took a long time to really get through to me that the nuclear weapons lobby in America acts exactly in the same way as tobacco or big pharma or the banks and insurance companies or the any other arms dealers. That as far as they're concerned, they would like to sell 1 million hydrogen bombs, and they will push to just, they don't care, you know, and maybe they'll even push to create a nuclear weapons policy friendly toward that end, just like any other industry would as well. But there's no limit on how many nukes they want to sell, and they don't look at it from any other point of view than that's their job, selling nukes. And they don't look at it from a, well, you know, come on, humans only need so many nukes, right, kind of point of view. But I'm sorry, what I'm trying to get to is I think that most Americans are like me. They never even really imagine that you would have like the most cynical lawyer lobbyist kind of people up there lobbying, pushing to sell H-bombs. They figure that that is a demand side equation only, where the military says exactly how many they need for defense purposes, but no other cynical conflicts of interest, you know, at all. So for them to say, well, okay, but we're not a complex, we're just an enterprise, to me is a huge admission, you know, that such a thing is even real. To me, it's a great talking point to point to for people to imagine what was previously probably unimaginable to them.
Well, you know, there's a lot unimaginable that, you know, have to do with nuclear weapons. You know, this week is the 70th anniversary of the United States having dropped two nuclear weapons of mass destruction on Japan. So two bombs, more than 200,000 people died in the short term. Many more died from radiation sickness after that. So, you know, it's a good time to reflect on, all right, now 70 years later, and particularly after President Obama and Cold Warriors, including Henry Kissinger, George Shultz, William Perry, have all called for the elimination of nuclear weapons because of the high risk to the world. And yet, you know, the United States plans to spend some $348 billion, and that's just for starters, over the next 10 years to modernize U.S. nuclear weapons. So, you know, one of the questions that my colleague Bert Hubbard and I wanted to look at was, where is that going? Who's winning? Who's losing? And New Mexico, which 3 weeks ago, 70 years ago, in other words, July 16th, 1945, was where the very first atomic bomb of mass destruction was developed and tested. So, you know, it was a good time to look at the way the so-called enterprise operates.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, as far as the B-61, back to that for just a second, because you guys are talking about how, you know, this is really, they've kind of exploited a loophole in the policy here where by making this, by basically adding a JDAM tail kit, sort of a satellite guided tail kit to what was previously a dumb ballistic bomb, right? And but what that means, though, is it's a giant shift, as you explain, in the usability of this weapon. I think you say it even has a dial on it where you can dial down the yield to acceptable for a politician to go ahead and hit the button on. Is that it?
Well, that's the concern. I mean, you know, this bomb, you know, it's called a life extension program, and it's part of, it's supposed to be part of the notion that as long as nuclear weapons exist, we have to make sure that they are reliable, because now there are 9 countries with nuclear weapons, and, you know, you don't want to encourage any of those countries to use such weapons. So the at the maximum explosive force of this bomb, it's 50,000 tons of TNT equivalent, but it can be dialed down, reduced to 300 tons. Now, the concern there from the experts, and, you know, I'm a journalist reporting on this and not an expert, but the experts, you know, say, oh, you know, there's big concern here. Because if the military argues that, all right, here is a 300-ton, you know, equivalent with much less collateral damage, much less fallout, therefore, in a conflict, you might be able to use this bomb against a target without having radioactive fallout that would fall on your allies and friends, that could encourage the military to indeed recommend to a president that nuclear weapons be used. And once that were to happen, you know, there's great concern among everyone who's studied nuclear weapons that if nuclear weapons are again used, no one knows what the outcome is going to be. Yeah. You know, is that going to start a regional nuclear war, a global nuclear war? You know, because the 15,000 weapons that are out there, it's a good drop, and you know, we should all be happy that it's much less than the 64,000 peak that we hit back in the 80s. But still, those 15,000 weapons have the explosive equivalent of well more than 100,000 Hiroshima bombs. So, you know, we're not out of danger when it comes to nuclear weapons yet. You know, the Cold War ended, but the nuclear weapons age didn't.
Yeah. Well, you know, we just finished this interview with Chris Woods about the air war in Iraq, and previously he had done all this work on the drone wars. And part of that whole discussion is the lessons of Iraq War II are that the Americans really don't want to lose a bunch of infantry and Marines. But air war, sure. And so I worry that that argument that you just made about the usability of these tactical nukes and that kind of thing to have that much more play in that same, you know, post-Iraq War II era where, man, mm-hmm. you really want to do a Bush-style invasion? Well, here's an alternative, Mr. President. I'm sorry. Hang on one second. We'll be right back, everybody, with Len Acklin. Wrote this great article about the nuclear weapons industrial complex. Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Jacob Hornberger, tireless champion of liberty and president of the FFF, brings you the best libertarian writers every month on the topics that need our treatment the most. Read Jacob, Jim Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, Joe Stromberg, and more every month in The Future of Freedom. It's just $25 a year for the pocket-sized print edition, $15 to read it online. The Future of Freedom, fff.org/subscribe. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. Talking with Len Acklin about this great article. You really got to read this thing, man. I'm serious. It's at revealnews.org. Revealnews.org. Obama pledged to reduce nuclear arsenal. Then came this weapon. And then I love this quote. It's straight out of Henry Hazlitt, right? There's no question that the labs are a major portion of the economy, especially in Albuquerque and northern New Mexico. They employ thousands of people. And a little taste of the seen and not a question of the unseen there. But of course, we're talking about really Uncle Sam holding humanity hostage here with a gun to its head. You guys talk about, and I want to get to the revolving door stuff here in a second, but you guys bring up what Daniel Ellsberg has talked about on the show as well. Even a very limited nuclear war between India and Pakistan could mean what exactly for humanity?
Well, it could mean disaster. That has been shown. There are scientists who worked on nuclear winter back in the 1980s who have done recalculations. Brian Toon at the University of Colorado has worked with colleagues, and their analysis shows that if India and Pakistan, for example, were to fire 100 nuclear weapons at each other, that the explosions would generate so much, you know, dust and particles and crud into the air that in fact you would have a nuclear winter kind of outcome for the Earth. With a relatively small, quote, unquote, nuclear war. So, you know, the nuclear weapons, I mean, just the idea that they're weapons is such a misnomer. I mean, these are devices that are made to for mass destruction. You know, they're not weapons in any common sense of the word. So, you know, it's something that that people, you know, forget about, mm-hmm. Don't think about, and yet they still it's the greatest short-term risk to the planet, because if there were a you probably remember this back in the 80s, we used to talk about fast death and slow death. So people who worked on nuclear weapons issues worked on fast death. In those days, we thought about, you know, 15 or 20 minutes before launch time, so that for my generation was, the constant nuclear fear. Slow death was environmental degradation. Well, these days, you know, I think a lot of people pay attention to climate change and global warming and environmental problems, but have forgotten that, in the absence of attention, the nuclear weapons enterprise has gone along its merry way, making weapons and profits.
Yeah. Well, and again, you know, as you said, these, you know, you mentioned the term weapons of mass destruction there, which is always kind of a silly way to try to conflate mustard gas with an H-bomb, which could, of course, kill all of Houston, right? Mm-hmm. All of some massive city out there like that, or, you know, a huge chunk of the eastern seaboard, some of these larger multi-tens of megaton H-bombs that they have, that our enemies have, or our would-be adversaries like Russia and China have, that could just wipe our major cities completely off the map. And, as you say, yeah, it's just kind of a issue in the background. Hardly anyone ever even talks about it. And they go on their merry way, as you say. Nobody really ever even questioning the policy, except for, it seems like, the worst people in the world, like Henry Kissinger and George Shultz and all these, you know, so-called graybeard, senior former State Department officials and Defense Department officials. They're coming together and saying, in a nutshell, hey, we actually know about these things, and before we die, we want to try to see if we can, you know, provide y'all a little wisdom now that it's too late, now that we don't have power anymore, and let's advise a severe reduction in nuclear weapons. But their cries are falling on deaf ears, right? Nobody even seems to notice them.
Well, that's the big concern, absolutely. You know, how do you wake people up? People have, you know, so many concerns, and of course, in a mass consumption society, people have many trivial concerns as well. But how do you get them and the policymakers to address these issues? And one of the concerns, you know, that we found with New Mexico is, and you know, over the debate of about the B-6112 bomb, you know, was it really a full debate, or was it skewed by the power of the of the defense contractors and their allies, so that questions weren't raised? I mean, you know, if you look at it just the language, the idea that there are to be no new nuclear weapons with new military capabilities. Well, if you have a bomb that's a free fall gravity bomb, and suddenly you make it a guided, accurate bomb, how is that not a new military capability?
Right. Yeah, sure sounds like it. But yeah, again, they can do what they want. Laws are for little people, not for how the government is to operate, really, you know. And now, so this seems like an important talking point to use, too, is that Robert Gates's office put out a report saying we only need 14 nukes. That's enough to threaten any powerful nation state that they better not mess with us. But that's few enough that we're not really threatening all of mankind with extinction. So seems like a reasonable compromise for starters, right? 14. And it's a Republican former head of the CIA, Secretary of Defense under Bush and Obama, and neocon and realist seals of approval on him and everything, right?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that report, but I'll look at it.
Oh, yeah, it was the Office of the Secretary of Defense put out. Some Air Force generals wrote it up. I guess it would have been 2007 or 8. This could have been 8.
Right. Well, you know, obviously, when you get down to the low numbers of nuclear weapons, 15,000 is, I guess, something of a low number if you compare it to the 64,000 that were there. But and of those 15,000, some 92-93% of those are in the hands of the United States and Russia. So clearly, the U.S. and Russia are the countries that people should be focusing on to reduce the arsenals, as well as trying to, you know, keep other nations like Iran from joining the so-called nuclear club. The problem is that if the United States, one of the two nuclear superpowers and arguably the one economic superpower left, if the United States is developing bombs that look like they are valuable and, you know, might be possibly, you know, considered in a conflict, then how are other countries going to react, both nuclear nation states as well as those who aspire to nuclear weapons? You know, if you say, hey, this is so valuable that we have to make it, then why not everybody? And that's a big concern.
Mm-hmm. Well, have they decided, is it a matter of consensus, or how do they decide whether they've achieved what they think is first strike capability, meaning the nullification of the mutually assured destruction doctrine? Because, you know, it's always argued. There's this one guy that's been commenting on my show entries for years and years, saying the same thing every time. As soon as we think we got first strike capability, that means that they have to launch on warning, the Russians, that they have to launch on an even lighter hair trigger than before if they even think something is wrong, because of the balance being tipped so far in that favor. Are we there yet? Is that right?
Well, I hope not. You know, one of the great, again, you know, unresolved issues is, you know, how many of the nuclear weapons in the U.S. arsenal are on alert, and on alert for what? You know, we've seen instances There was, 25 years ago, launch of a missile in Norway that the Russians mistook for the beginning of a missile attack. Mm-hmm. They were very close to calling, you know, a retaliatory strike. I mean, you know, the world is too precious to have these kinds of risks there. I mean, if you care about a sustainable Earth, then you have to say we've got to get rid of nuclear weapons. And the best way to start is, you know, to reduce the arsenals. But of course, that goes against the interests, the profit sheets of the defense contractors, the bureaucratic interests of the Air Force and Navy, the nuclear arms in those branches of the service. You know, so you know there are a lot of countervailing forces that really have to be met by public opinion. And if the public is silent, then the military-industrial congressional complex is going to simply proceed, and the world is going to become ever riskier.
And now, could we end with that? Could you give us an example or two, a couple of the more obvious ones of the complex at work, that revolving door, Iron Triangle there, where politicians become lobbyists and all that kind of thing in this area?
Right. Well, my colleague Bert Hubbard did a really great job, and if your listeners go to the revealnews.org website, there's an interactive graphic that takes just six figures, who are part of the nuclear weapons enterprise, and shows all the various connections between the positions that they've held, and both in the defense industry as well as in the public sphere. So, for example, you have a congressionally appointed panel, 12-member panel, appointed by Senator Tom Udall of New Mexico, and not appointed by him, but he was the person who, along with John Kyle of Arizona, proposed that this panel be instituted. So the panel, half of the members of this panel have connections with the weapons lab. You know, the chairman of the panel was the former chairman of Lockheed Martin. So you've got this and they, of course, in their report, which was titled, interestingly enough, A New Foundation for the Nuclear Enterprise, essentially criticizes the National Nuclear Security Agency administration that's under the Department of Energy, criticizes it for being, in their words, dysfunctional because it doesn't have proven management practices. They basically are calling for less oversight of the nuclear enterprise, and that is good for the contractors, but what's good for contractors isn't necessarily good for the nation.
Yeah, in this case, couldn't possibly be worse, even if you were just making it up. I mean, we're talking again about H-bombs here. It's just, it's incredible. And you know, the fact of how alone you and your co-author stand in doing this kind of journalism is almost as shocking as what you report here. I mean, this obviously just kind of not even as a matter of opinion, right? It's almost a mathematical fact that assuming that the future of humanity's survival is important, then this is the most important issue facing all of us all day, every day, until they're all gone. Simple as that. What else could be more important, especially when it comes to our relationship with Russia, for example, this kind of thing? I mean,
well,
forget
again,
India and Pakistan.
Yeah. Again, in the short term, we're talking about the fast death. You know, there are other issues that are very important, and I applaud people who are engaged in so many socioeconomic issues. But, you know, when we're talking about the survival of the planet, we're really talking about nuclear weapons, the threat to survival. We're talking about nuclear weapons and climate change.
All right. Hey, listen, thanks very much for your time on the show. I sure appreciate it, Len.
Thank you.
All right, y'all. That is Len Acklin. And again, he was formerly the editor of the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists magazine and wrote a book about the Rocky Flats nuclear bomb factory near Denver. And this article, very important article, really long, really worth the read, is at revealnews.org. Obama pledged to reduce the nuclear arsenal. Then came this weapon. Revealnews.org. And that's it for the show. Overtime. See y'all tomorrow. Thanks. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still. If you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium. And they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.